Welcome back. We are in the Torah, the book of Leviticus, the parasha called Achrei Motz, moving into the parasha called Kedoshim, meaning holy ones. Combining of two parashot this time of year on this week. We pick up our study, Leviticus 18, verse 22, continuing to look at the laws concerning sexuality. Verse 22, you are not to go to bed with a man as with a woman. It is an abomination. So homosexuality here being singled out as an abomination, though there have been mentioned other sexual sins that are disallowed, this is the only one that's called an abomination in particular. Shaul, the rabbi, Paul, that is, in Romans chapter 1, would later pronounce this particular sexual sin as a sin that goes against the schematic. He refers to the natural versus the unnatural use of the body. And this is against the schematic, in other words, the wiring diagram, the schematic of humanity. And so it receives this description as an abomination in the Torah. Verse 23, you are not to have sexual relations with any kind of animal and thus become unclean with it, nor is any woman to present herself to an animal to have sexual relations with it. It is perversion. This particular sin is singled out as perversion. And the Hebrew expression means a mingling and mixing up. It refers to the perverting, the mingling of human seed and animal seed. So similar to homosexuality in that it's described as being a mixing up, like the schematic not being followed correctly of how human life would reproduce itself, that is going with the schematic. Verse 24, do not make yourselves unclean by any of these things, because all the nations which I am expelling ahead of you are defiled with them. So these particular vices and sins of the flesh, sexual sins, were common everywhere. Remember, these things that we've been reading about are no new thing. We can't say, oh, this is on the increase today, or that is on the increase. The only thing that is happening in our culture is that these things, at least some of them, are being considered normal, which is also not a new thing, because they were considered normal during the Greek Empire, during the Roman Empire, which I think America is very similar to the ancient Roman Empire. These things were considered normal by the people of the land, God says, but it should not be considered normal by you. He says in verse 25, the land has become unclean, and this is why I am punishing it. The land itself will vomit out its inhabitants. But you are to keep my laws and rulings and not engage in any of these disgusting practices. Neither the citizen nor the foreigner living with you. For the people of the land, that is, the Canaanites, have committed all these abominations, and the land is now defiled. You think of that, how the earth, the land where these things are practiced, the land becomes defiled. It becomes stained. You can feel it as you move through certain parts of certain cities and where these types of sins are more accepted. There's a spiritual feeling to it. It's a defilement of the land. But the people of Israel should not live like this. From the Midrash Rabbah, one rabbi said that this matter may be compared to the case of a king who had an orchard planted with one row of fig trees, one of vines, one of pomegranates, and one of apples. He entrusted it to a tenant and went away. After a time, the king came and looked in at the orchard to ascertain what it had yielded. He found it full of thorns and briars, so he brought woodcutters to level it. He looked closely at the thorns and noticed among them a single rose-colored flower. He smelled it, and his spirits calmed down. The king said, "The whole orchard shall be saved because of this flower." The single rose-colored flower was Israel. He took it and smelled it when he gave them the Ten Commandments, and his spirits were calmed when they said, "We will do and we will hear." Don't do as the people of the land do. We are the one beautiful rose-colored flower. So similar, isn't it, that parable to the parables of Yeshua, who spoke and taught in the same manner, followed the same style of teaching through stories and illustrations and parables as did his other rabbinic counterparts, pre-first century, first century, and onward. The rabbis taught in parables. Yeshua was a rabbi. On to chapter 19 and verse 1. Adonai said to Moshe, "Speak to the entire community of Israel. Tell them, you people are to be holy, because I, Adonai, your God, am holy." Holiness, separation. The ancient rabbis taught that it was not just the abstaining from doing certain things, but that it was what your heart looked at and what your eye examined. One ancient commentary says, after quoting the book of Job, where it says, "The eye also of the adulterer waits for the twilight, saying, no eye shall see me. And he that dwells in secret puts a face." Resh Lakish, an ancient rabbi, expounded, "You must not suppose that only he who has committed the crime with his body is called an adulterer. If he commits adultery with his eyes, he is also called an adulterer. For it says the eyes also of the adulterer in Job 24, verse 15. So again, Jesus echoing and teaching in harmony with the ancient rabbis, that it wasn't just the act, but it was the motive of the heart. Many times we think that the ancient Jewish sages were only about the external. Many times people blame the Pharisees, for example, for only following the external. That was not true. That may have been true of some, or it may have been true of some of the group that Yeshua was speaking to. But within historic Judaism, within the ancient texts, that admonition is there. To be holy meant not just abstaining from things, but making sure that your heart and your eyes were not longing for those things that God said were to be abstained from. "I am holy," God says. Verse 3, "Every one of you is to revere his father and mother, and you are to keep my Shabbats. I am Adonai, your God. So here a reiteration of the mitzvot, the commandments given before, the Ten Commandments, for example. The honoring or the revering of his father and mother, linked together with the revering and honoring of God's Shabbat, following God's days of rest, revering them as we would our father and mother. The day of Shabbat, that it would be crowned with glory and honor, just like we would with our parents. Do not turn to idols, verse 4, and do not cast metal gods for yourselves. I am Adonai your God. Idolatry, images, statues, all of this is disallowed. Why? Because God says, I am God, not statues. Statues can't contain, images can't contain and fully express the majesty of the God of heaven. I am the Lord your God, he says. We drop down to verse 9. When you harvest the ripe crops produced in your land, don't harvest all the way to the corners of your field, and don't gather the ears of grain left by the harvesters. Likewise, don't gather the grapes left on the vine or fallen on the ground after harvest. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am Adonai, your God. So again, God's provision for the poor was to come from the people. The people, from their own income, were to provide support for the needy. Today, much of our contribution to the poor comes through taxation, but also personally, are we setting aside some of what God has given us for the needs of the poor and, it says, the foreigner, people who have come into our country or come into our family or come into our community that are not from here? How can we bless them? How can we help them? Continually, this theme comes through in the teaching of the Torah. Because the Jewish people, we have been strangers in many strange lands. And so we should help to make strangers feel more at home. Leaving, not consuming everything that we're given, but leaving a portion to people that really need it. Look around you and see. Ask God to open your eyes to the needs of the poor and the foreigners that are all around us and help them directly. This is Torah 101.